Welcome into the Friends with Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I'm your host, Ben Brennis, joined today by Ray Kuhn. How are you doing, Ray?
I'm doing good, Ben. We are up and running. You decided to get your technology to work. Let's have a good show here.
Yeah, technology seems to hate me lately. Don't know why. Apparently, when your Skype updates, it screws up all your recording equipment, and it makes you basically break your computer in half for it to work, which makes no sense. So,
well, hopefully you got your computer back together with a little duct tape or something.
No, you know what? I actually used Silly Putty to piece it back together, so, and I'm holding it while we're recording. It's very shitty.
Okay, I can see that. I can definitely see that.
You know, Ray, we actually have a guest on tonight. Did you know that?
I think I might have heard that somewhere.
Yes, we actually have the infamous J.R. Benton. J.R., how are you doing tonight?
Yo, boys, I'm stoked to be on with Ray, Ray, and Benji. This is fucking sweet.
My name is Benjasa. Let's get that straight. It's not Benji. Benjasa will suffice.
You'll always be Benji to me.
Benny in the Nets.
There we go. You know, we were smart, right? We started off the season with Evan. Then we upgraded that to Colin. And then we've upgraded Colin to JR. I think we're working our way up to the top of the industry.
But what about upgrading the host on the show?
Now we're talking.
Well, see, the problem is if you upgrade the host, that means you got to find someone who can record. And I understand I'm having technology problems, but if you can't find someone else to record, how are you going to have a host?
You know, yeah, what? You got a little job security there, my friend.
A little bit. Only as much as Justin Mason gives me, and that's not a lot. I have as much leash as the Mets got liked out Steven Matz yesterday. So,
woo! I guess some team is happy that they did not trade for Matz at the deadline.
To be fair, he had a better start than Tyler Skaggs.
I was just going to say I'm playing in my home league against a guy who has both Matz and Skaggs. So I'm like, pitching's done. We're good.
We're done. All right, guys. Today we're basically going to be looking over the MLB trade deadline, as I'm sure 100 other podcasts over the industry are going to be covering. But let's look at some of the fantasy impact that some of these players have. And obviously, there's going to be a lot of free agents upcoming, but there's some moves that are a bit of head scratchers. So why don't we start off with one that happened right at the deadline? That's Jonathan Scope going from the Orioles to the Brewers. This is after Mike Moustakas goes from the Royals over to the Brewers. So now the Brewers have basically two third basemen, and they have a second baseman. They have a shortstop and seven first basemen, it feels like. So how are they going to mix all these players correctly, plus all the outfielders, and actually have a resemblance of a nine-player team? What are you thinking, JR?
I love it. I love Scope. I love that you get more bats. Why not? You can never have more bats. You can never have enough. Like, just load them up. Who cares? They're going to be able to play where they play. These guys have played baseball their whole lives, whether it's second or short or third. They'll be fine. Now, the problem's going to be the manager. What are you going to do, Council? Are you going to sit these guys and have defensive guys play and be a loser? Or do you really want to just stack your lineup and have guys hit dingers? So for fantasy purpose, it could screw us a little bit. But on the optimal days where this lineup is loaded, we could see some big runs from the squad.
Yeah, I got to agree with that. I mean, let's be real. Scope so far in July is hitting .360 with 9 homers and 19 ribbies, and that's for a bad Baltimore team. He gets to go to Milwaukee now. Obviously, they got a ton of depth. What I think happened is they obviously got Moustakas. At that point, I don't think getting Scope was on their radar. They traded Brett Phillips for Moustakas. Phillips, he's going to go to Kansas City, and he's going to play every day. And I think we have to, at least in deeper leagues, Kip Phillips maybe a drop of attention because he has some power, some speed abilities, and he's going to be getting the ABs. But Moustakas is a free agent in 2 months. Scope is signed for another few years. Everybody knows trading with Baltimore is almost impossible. So how the heck are they really supposed to know that Scope would have been available? I think, like JR said, you got to jump on that. And they talked about playing Arcia at short as starter, which I think is probably not your best idea if Arcia continues not to hit. You're in the National League. All these guys can play everywhere. Just do a double switch in the seventh inning to get Arcia in the game for defense if you need. And that's the end of it.
I mean, it is funny that Baltimore actually was able to like pull off like five or six trades this year, because they are pretty difficult to work with and people aren't made aware of who's available. I mean, no one's as bad as the Nationals saying, oh, guys, Bryce Harper's available. There's only like 15 hours left before the deadline, but sure, he's available. Like, you know,
At that point, they were 5.5 games out, and they knew that they were playing the tomato can Mets for 2 games after that. So, I mean, let's be real. The Braves and the Phillies, they both upgraded a little bit. They're both probably a year ahead of schedule. Washington can very easily catch them. I mean, it's very possible they threw Harper's name out there. They didn't like what they heard. They pull him back, and then they score 25 runs. So I don't think it's really that big of a deal.
I mean, and if it was me, what I would have done was I would have moved him. I would have put him on the block 2 weeks ago. I would have moved him for something and tried to get what the Yankees got with Aroldis Chapman, and then go and sign him in the offseason, or attempt to sign him in the offseason. Be like, look, we got all these players, and now you can come up. Juan Soto is going to be here. Victor Robles will be here. We still have Adam Eaton if you want that bum. You know, we still have Trey Turner and Rendon. We can re-sign Murphy. There's plenty of moves that they can do, you know, and you can bring in pieces to make things work. And someone would have paid. So, I understand what you're saying, but back to what the Brewers did, I don't have any issue with the talent that they brought in. I have an issue with what you were saying. If they play Arcia, because if they play Arcia, it makes absolutely no sense, because Arcia's offense, or the offense downgrade from either Scope at short to what Arcia is able to have, and the defense between the two, I got to think that the offense is going to outweigh it. And I got to think that Craig Counsell will see that at some point. And I understand these front offices are being extremely analytical, but they have to look at it from, you have to score more runs than the other team. And how are you going to do that? You're going to do that with a better
offense. That's how you play baseball? You score more runs than the other team?
That's the whole point of Moneyball, if you ever saw it. So.
Yeah, but let's talk about, I think this was the best get for the Orioles in all of their trades. I'm a big Jonathan Villar guy. I mean, yeah, you know what? Council didn't like him from the jump. So he was in the doghouse from day one. And they got two of their best prospects back. Like, I think the Orioles did great in getting back for Jonathan Scope, who they weren't even going to deal up until 15 minutes of the deadline passed.
You know, I agree with that. I think you got to talk about Villar a little bit. And the fact that now once he comes off the DL, which I think is going to be in a few days, he's going to get to play every day and not have to worry about Council.
Now, Buck doesn't send his runners. The Orioles traditionally do not run, and that's VR's strength. So now I'm very curious, as a VR owner, is he going to get turned loose? Is he going to have the green light to go whenever he wants? Because I thought Tim Beckham was going to have that. He never got it. So now I'm kind of worried, like, maybe VR steals won't be what we thought, but he's going to have all the playing time, so who knows?
I think that there's a chance that he maybe gets 12 steals for the rest of the season, which is a high amount, but I think that's basically where you can cap it, and at a minimum, he's going to get 5 or 6. So I understand that that's not as much as what every VR owner is looking for, but because Buck doesn't run as much, and VR is having a better year this year than what he had last year, but he's still going to have to get on base, and there's just not a lot of hitters who are going to be able to bring him in. So
I'll take the over 12 then. I'll take your over.
It would be nice. I mean, I don't own him anymore. It would be nice because I understand the value of having someone be put into a situation like this where there's significant fantasy upside. So I would like to be able to see VR succeed there.
Well, it's like you said, no one's going to knock him in. So why not take the chance and run? I mean, let's create some scoring opportunities. He's going to hit singles all day. The guys behind him are not going to knock him in. You might as well just send him. Let him go whenever he wants. It's VR. He's had 30 steals in a season before.
Yeah, I mean, he proven he can do it. And, I mean, whatever's going on in Baltimore at this point is not working either.
Exactly. In regards to Moustakas, what do we think of his fantasy value for the rest of the year? Do we think that of all three players, Travis Shaw, Jonathan Scope, and Mike Moustakas, who do we think has greatest fantasy output for the rest of the season? Is it Mike Moustakas because he seems the most likely to get guaranteed playing time, or someone else?
Go ahead, Ray. I'll let you take it first.
I would say Moose, honestly, because I think he's the better. I think he's better than he's a better player than Shaw. And if anyone's going to lose playing time, it's going to be Shaw or Scope because of the middle infield situation. So, I mean, I would like to say Scope just continuing on the hot streak that he was on, and maybe he's going to match what he did last year. But he's also coming out of Baltimore, coming out of the small ballparks in the AL East. So I'd say Moustakas just because we've seen Moustakas driving 100 before, and now he's going to a much better lineup than he had probably the last, like, 2 years with Kansas City.
So we know Moustakas, because the home run derby, bangs all home runs to right field. I mean, we saw that when he was in there. He had 21 round. He's going to a park that's 5 feet shorter in right field. So maybe, what, a couple more home runs increase? I don't know. We're talking 325 to 330. That's the dimensions in right field. I don't know. You got to go Moose, right? He's a power hitter.
I mean, he gets to go Wrigley if he gets the wind blowing out in Wrigley. You get to face Cincinnati's pitching.
Do we think that there's a chance that the Brewers possibly open playing time somewhere with an actual waiver wire trade?
In terms of what are they going to do? What else can they move, though? Are they going to move an outfielder, though? Are they going to move a first baseman? They can't move anyone else in the infield.
I mean, I don't think that they would really move anyone from the outfield. I mean, if they do, I would guess it's more than likely Broxton Thames or Domingo Santana. I think that they could easily see that, you know, if Travis Shaw is playing well and they don't want to play Scope at short and he's playing well and Moose is playing well. I mean, I don't think that they would want to move Jesus Aguilar, but I guess they could potentially move him if
there's some
great pitcher out there. You know, I don't think there's going to be a Verlander from last year, but
Those guys aren't clearing waivers, though.
Yep, they're not.
You know, Santana's not clearing waivers. Broxton's not clearing waivers. I mean, those would be the guys that I would think they would trade. I don't think anybody really wants Braun.
I think there's a decent chance that Keon Broxton could clear waivers that, with what his age is and his strikeout.
But he's free. You're gonna tell me one of those bottom teams wouldn't just say, "Hey, we're just gonna grab him because there's literally no risk involved."
I mean, you could have easily moved him and Domingo Santana probably got someone like a Chris Archer or something if you had considered moving something like that. So, I mean, I'm a little surprised that they didn't consider that with all the depth that they have.
Well, so. I think they definitely dropped the ball on not getting a pitcher to begin with because I think they probably missed their chance given the other assets that they had to trade to get Scope and Moose. And, I mean, yeah, Braun's really the one that would be nice to trade. But again, at the same time, Santana's really, I guess, Braun insurance if you're not going to play teams and left.
I mean, they're not even playing Braun, really. And if everyone's healthy on their team, their best lineup is going to have Thames in right field.
Yeah.
It's going to have Aguilar at first anyway. It's going to have Braun as the fourth outfielder. So
I guess the question is then whose role is going to diminish the most from this, you know, stacking of bats? Who's going to take a step back? Is it Scope? Is it Trawl? Is it Moose? Is it one of the outfielders? I don't know.
I think it's more than likely going to be Travis Shaw just for the fact that he was already there and they not only decided to take him off his primary position of third, knowing that his backup position of first wasn't available and say, I think we're comfortable playing him at second. But then at the deadline, they can go and get a second baseman. So I'm pretty sure that if they're looking to take time away from someone, it's going to be Travis Shaw.
That's for 2 months, and then Shaw goes back to third next year. I think Braun probably loses at the most because Braun has no openings to playing time now.
I agree.
Why don't we move on to the next trade and let's talk a little bit about Chris Archer. Chris Archer goes over to Pittsburgh Pirates in return for Austin Meadows and Tyler Glass now. So what do we think of what Archer's value is going to be in Pittsburgh, Greg?
I like it. I had an article that went up on the site today, Wednesday, where I talked about a little bit about Archer and I guess the excitement of him going to Pittsburgh and getting to work with Ray Searage. He's getting out of the AL East. last 2 years, we've seen a disparity between like half a run to a run from his ERA and his FIP saying that his ERA should be lower. I mean, the strikeouts have been there. Archer's one of those guys that I feel like he's just on the cusp. That if you look at him and you're like, all right, this guy should be an ace or he should be a strong SP2. And then he comes in as like a weaker SP2 and kind of, and then he has some of these starts where it's like, yeah, why am I going to invest a high round pick in this guy again? That I think getting out of Tampa could be a good thing for him. Going into a pennant race, working with Searidge, I think Archer could start to pitch more like the guy that people have almost thought that he was the last few years.
What about you, JR?
I play devil's advocate because I kind of agree that I think Archer will dominate in Pittsburgh. But the haul that they got back with Austin Meadows and Tyler Glasnow, are you kidding me? Like, I thought Austin Meadows from the start of the season should have been starting. I didn't think they should have got Corey Dickerson. I thought they should have gave it to Austin Meadows. The kid can run. The kid can hit. And then you got Glasnow, who we know is a project. We Ray Searidge really couldn't fix him. But now we're going a whole change of pace. Let's see what happens. We have really two big talents right here. And there's still a third player to be named that we're supposed to know is going to be an okay player. I mean, if you're going to deal Chris Archer, this is what you want back. You want guys who are going to help your club this year, next year, and for the future. If you're the Rays, you couldn't have gotten a better deal for Chris Archer.
100%.
Yeah. I like the deal of what the return was. I like a lot of the deals that Tampa Bay was able to do and the players that they were able to bring in. I think that they brought in a lot of talent, and the talent that they moved out was pieces that we know that they wanted to move for some amount of time anyway, and the players that were prospects weren't overly highly rated in their system and amongst other systems in baseball in general. I think that Chris Archer is going to be able to succeed as we've seen what his numbers are outside of the AL East. We've seen what he's able to do with strikeouts. Working with Searidge will give him a different perspective. He may need to change his scenario, so I think that's good. Austin Meadows, I think, is going to be able to get a good amount of playing time. I guess it really depends on how he's able to perform. Obviously, they brought in Tony Pham at the deadline. They still have Carlos Gomez. They have Kevin Kiermaier. So I guess it depends on if Austin Meadows is able to be like, hey, guys, I deserve to have all the playing time I can get, and they give it to him. If that's the case, then they have a really good player. I think for fantasy, you're going to have a player who's able to give you some steals and some home run pop while scoring some runs. With a 280 average for the rest of the season. Tyler Glasnow, we'll see if he's able to get his control under control, basically. I think if he ever is able to achieve a decent amount of control, then we're going to be seeing a highly prolific strikeout person, possibly someone in the form of like a Josh Hader or someone who could easily turn into a Chris Archer-type player down the road if he's able to fix his control issues.
Is Carlos Gomez someone that we see pass through waivers and be a waiver wire deadline? Because that's someone that a contender could use. They could use a veteran like Gomez who can play any position in the outfield, who can run the bases as a pinch runner, and can come in for a timely hit. That's someone that the Rays should move to help clear the way in this little bunched-up outfield that they have right now.
Yeah, man, I agree. Yeah, I think he's one of those clear waiver guys.
Yeah, I think there's two outfielders in the American League East that will both be in that same boat. I think Curtis Granderson and Carlos Gomez will both be in that same boat. There's going to obviously be teams that are looking for some leadership and some fourth outfielder role to be filled. Someone who can pinch run, can pinch hit, knows how to field all three outfield positions. So I see a lot of benefit there. I could see them easily saying, hey, we don't need to play Carlos Gomez as much. The contract isn't the biggest deal in the world, and I'm pretty sure they don't have a lot of people under commitment going forward anyway, so they might as well see what they have in Austin Meadows. The one thing that does worry me is that the Pirates have taken so long to bring him up, and they've had opportunities, and he was up for part of the year and then sent back down. I would like to see him be able to consistently perform while he's up and just keep the job and put an absolute stranglehold on it. Why don't we move into the next deal, and that's going to be talking about the Braves basically getting Kevin Gausman. They also got Darren O'Day, but I don't believe that any of us see a significant amount of fantasy relevance from a player like Darren O'Day, given what the bullpen uncertainty is with Atlanta and the fact that Vizcaino will come back at some point, so that will push A.J. Minter from the closer role back to the set role more than likely, and they still have Dan Winkler. So I don't think any of us see a lot of fantasy relevance for Darren O'Day, but
JR. Isn't he out for the year anyway?
Yeah, he's not playing. He should not pitch again the rest of this year. I mean, maybe postseason if they want to put on the postseason roster, but he's not going to regular season. Don't expect to see him.
I think there's a chance he's up in September, but you know, not very much of anything. But basically, you know, if you don't keep interrupting me, I'm going to boot you off your own show. So
wow. I'm just trying to make sure our listeners get the correct information.
What information? I told them to not pick up Darren O'Day. I don't know why you need to point out the fact that he's likely not playing when I say don't pick him up anyway. What is there a difference in between what you're saying and what I'm saying? There isn't.
Because you're implying that they have an option. What I'm trying to say is there's no option. Don't pick him up.
Well, regardless, they still got Gausman. And that's someone that I wanted the Phils to get because I thought that would slide in perfect for number three, number four, right around Pivetta, you know, after Arrieta, after Nola. That would have been a perfect get for the Phillies. And I thought we had the assets to give for that. And I have no idea why we didn't make that move. I get that he's a high fly ball rate pitcher. And maybe they didn't want to do that in Citizens Bank Park coming into August and September with that wind blowing in the hot air. But God, the Braves got him. I was so pissed that Klintak let him slip through his fingers and go right to the Braves because we could have offered a package that might have been even better because what the Braves sent to the Orioles sucked. I mean, they got number four, number five starter return for him, and we could have given a number three, number two starter return, and I don't know why that conversation wasn't made. I really want to figure that out, so I'm going to talk to him when he comes into my bar. I'm going to say, yo, dude, what the hell were you thinking?
The only thing I can think of is that the international money played a big factor, similar to what happened with Jerry's Familia going from the Mets over to Oakland. And basically, the Mets got no actual return other than international money. And obviously, as we have seen, the Orioles have been trying to get as much international money as possible because it looks like they are trying to sign Victor Mesa once he actually is considered a free agent and works out for teams. So I would guess that was the purpose of it, and they just are like, well, Kevin Gausman sucks. Which means that since they got rid of Kevin Gausman, he's going to pull a Jake Arrieta in 2 years. So,
well, yeah, I think it was like $2.5 million they got from Atlanta in that deal, but it's crazy, though, because Atlanta had the international bonus money that they can't even use. So Atlanta gets a trade and asset that they have that they can't even use because they're sanctioned by MLB, and they get to put it towards the Gausman trade. But I mean,
it's not even fair.
No. Because they're essentially saying, yeah, we have this money, but we can't use it. So it's literally just going to go in the garbage. So instead, they get to trade it for Gausman.
That's absolutely terrible. That's something I need to talk to Klintak and his people because that's horrible that you let that happen. You let that bullshit happen where you could add in a solid fourth or fifth SP and stop running out there Zach Eflin or these AAA guys. And for spot starting, and you could add a guy who would have given you innings and go six or seven innings. Maybe he gives up three or four runs every time. He'll strike out six or seven, maybe on a good day. But he's going to give you the innings, and we need that for our bullpen. And I was really pissed the Phillies didn't do that.
Yeah, I don't blame him, man. He's going to eat the innings. So he strikes out 7.5 guys per nine. He only walks 2.3. And, I mean, that's down like a walk per nine innings from last year. And, I mean, even what you mentioned with the fly balls, he still has a 47% ground ball rate. So, I mean, yeah, you got to be a little concerned, but I'm not. And he gives up a homer and a half per nine innings. So there's some concern there, but I'm not like, you know, not enough for me to say, yeah, the Phillies shouldn't have gotten him or he wouldn't have done good in Philly or anything like that. And his XFIP is 4 or 5. So it almost feels
like Baltimore panicked and they were like, we got to get rid of him. The clock's about to tick. We waited till 3:30. Let's just get rid of him for whatever we can. That's what it feels like right now. And if I'm a Baltimore Orioles fan, I didn't get the right value because Gausman is not a four. He's not an SP4. Let's be real. He's maybe an SP2, at least an SP3 with the right toolage. That they just really got taken right there.
But I think you have to look at it. I mean, yeah, he's a 27-year-old starting pitcher who was a fourth pick overall in 2012. But I also don't understand how they traded Brock to Atlanta a few days before, and I think that was only $250,000 of international money. So, I mean,
do you see his career path for both of you? This is a question for both of you. Similar to what J.A. Happ was, who kind of was, you know, behind the eight ball and started later, you know, really blossomed when he was 28, 29, and now he's 32, 33, and he's getting treated for high-end prospects. Like, Gausman just didn't figure it out until a little bit later. Like, I see very high.
See, for me, what I think is, I think that Baltimore is just extremely bad at developing pitching. And as a result of that, I think that they need to bring in someone different to actually help develop the pitching, because we've seen time and time again when a pitcher will leave Baltimore that they are actually able to succeed elsewhere. I mean, it doesn't always happen, but I mean, look at what happened with Jake Arrieta. That's just one piece, but there have been other pieces that have been able to succeed elsewhere. So I do think that Kevin Gausman's someone who will figure it out somewhere else. I think he just needs kind of a change of scenery.
Yeah, I agree. I love the Arrieta comp that both you guys brought up. And again, he's still just 27 years old. And I feel like him and Dylan Bundy, too, I feel like we might be having this conversation about Bundy next year. That it's like they almost like started, stopped. They had some injury issues. Then they also had Hunter Harvey, who apparently has fallen off the face of the earth. That I just think it's not a good environment for young right-handed pitching. And going to Atlanta, you have to be a little bit concerned because we've seen what that ballpark has done to Julio Teheran. So, I mean, maybe you're still going to be a little concerned about Gausman, but I think that his situation did improve from fantasy-wise going to Atlanta.
All right, guys, why don't we move over to the next trade, and it's going to be talking a little bit about Brian Dozier going over to the Dodgers. The Dodgers didn't really have to give up anything of fantasy relevance for the Twins to actually be able to utilize at this current time. I mean, I guess if you are in a really deep league, Logan Forsythe may get some playing time, but I don't imagine that he's going to really be fantasy useful. What do we expect from Brian Dozier in the second half? Because we've seen time and time again over the last few years, he's had great second halves. And now he's on a team in which Dave Roberts says he may not even get to play every single day. So what can we expect fantasy-wise from Brian Dozier, JR?
What can we expect of Brian Dozier all the time? It's just to hit the ball. That's what the guy does. He's done it every year. We always doubt the guy. Consistently, everyone always puts Brian Dozier down, but what does he do? He hits dingers. So we heard this thing from Dave Roberts where, you know, he's not going to play every day, but let's be real. That's kind of BS. Dozier's going to play every day. He's the man. Kiki Hernandez is great, but just like Arcia in Milwaukee, you're not going to be seeing at bats, all right? Go to the bench, dude. You can play defense when we need you to come in. Let's get the big bats in here. Let's win games because we're in a pennant race and we're trying to win a title. So look at that infield, though. It's not even fair what the Dodgers did. Now I think they're clear favorites. I think all the guys are going to have a great year, whether it be Machado or him or Muncy or when God knows comes off the DL. He's going to have a fine year. And anyone who's scared of Dozier right now, just relax. Press the brakes. He's going to be in. Don't worry about it.
Amen. Right. I think Dozier's going to be fine. I think Dozier hits. He's going to play. And I think going to a pennant race, change scenery for the first time. He's going to be a free agent at the end of the year. I think he's going to hit. I think he's going to bounce back. We've seen him do it year in, year out. I mean, seriously, they really – I mean, Chris Taylor, I wasn't high on Chris Taylor going into the season. He's kind of been eh. And Kike, kind of the same thing. They have value as utility players to kind of plug in anywhere. I think that the cream's going to rise to the top. Dozier's the best option, the second base. They'll find PT for those other guys somewhere else, and that's really it.
Yeah, for me, as a Dozier owner in a dynasty league, I obviously have to hope that he has a good second half, and that when he goes somewhere next year to a team that doesn't have a crappy lineup. Like, I'm just hopeful that the Mets don't go sign him, because
the Mets aren't going to spend the money for Dozier.
The Mets spent money on Jason Vargas, Anthony Swarzak, Bruce, Todd Frazier.
The Mets are going to wait 10 more years until Dozier's on his way out of baseball.
So they're going to sign Chase Utley then.
Yeah.
First off, don't talk about Chase like that.
Don't worry. Okay. He's going to come back. He's going to come play for the Mets. And then what he's going to do is he's actually only going to, you know, like, do a
He's going to come back with his halo in Philadelphia.
No, he's going to come. He's going to be playing against Philadelphia. Scott Kingery is going to be on second base trying to turn double play. And boom, 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 we're going to have a Mets-Dodgers slide in the postseason with Ruben Tejada. That's what we're going to have with Scott Kingery. We're going to have a Ruben Tejada play.
I don't know how he got on the Chase, okay? But he is God, and we're not going to talk negatively about it.
But anyway, Brian Dozier from the second half. I mean, if he gets five steals for the rest of the second half, I think that's decent. I would like him to hit 15 home runs because it's down from the 21 they hit last year, basically. But, you know, if he's able to hit 10 to 15, I think that you can count that as a decent season. And
yeah, 10 home runs.
You just want him to hit 250 for the rest of the year because it's an improvement from where he's hitting right now. So I think that this will be a good lineup for him. I think that they have enough interchangeable pieces that he's able to still hit at the top of the lineup, and that they're going to be able to utilize him. And if they don't use him at the top of the lineup, he should be a good four or five batter for them.
I agree. That's actually pretty well said. It's how it should be.
All right, why don't we move into let's talk a little bit about the Phillies, because they brought in Wilson Ramos. So, JR, how do you feel about this move? Because, obviously, you guys needed a catcher, because Jorge Alfaro was not very good this year.
Well, two things here. Andrew Knapp, good friend of mine, great guy, great backup catcher. Jorge Alfaro is a powerful catcher. He's got the best arm maybe in the major leagues as far as catchers go, throwing guys out, whether it's snap throw to first or snap to second, catching guys stealing. So to me, I like both guys, but they're not on the same level as Wilson Ramos. Wilson Ramos has been haunting my dreams since he was a National and crushing us when we're having our downfall and the Nats were arising. So to have him now on our team is pretty sweet. We're not going to see him probably till September. I think that the Alfaro and Knapp can keep the ship going until then. And once we get Ramos added in, he's going to rake at Citizens Bank Park. He has phenomenal numbers there. It was a great add. We didn't give up many. I think we gave up our 16th best prospect for him. So good job by Klintak on that move. Excited to have him here.
What about you, Ray? Do you think that this is a good move? Because Wilson Ramos is having an absolutely fantastic offensive season. He's currently hurt right now, and he'll be back soon. But what do you think of this move in general?
Well, I think it's a great move. I mean, from a fantasy perspective, I don't think it has that much of an impact because I think they're going to be careful with him when he does come back in September because, again, you have Alfaro, you have Knapp, and at that point, September with the 40-man rosters, you can carry all three, and it's really going to be about making sure Ramos is healthy for the playoffs. So, I mean, real life, I think it's a great move. Fantasy, I'm not sure that really moves the needle all that much, but once Ramos comes back, he has to be rostered. He has to be in your lineup because I think he's going to do well both in that park and in that lineup.
To me, this was the opposite of what the Astros did. The Astros went out and got Maldonado, a catcher who could throw a guy out at second on a heartbeat.
Yep.
The Phillies went out and got a guy who can hit the ball on a heartbeat. We already had a guy who can throw somebody out. So it's a smart front office thing to try to – what are we doing in the future? What are the teams we're going to see? We're going to see teams that are going to run. That's why the Astros went out and got Maldonado. The Phillies said we need to get more offensive power from our 8-9 hole, and that's where the catcher is. So they went out and got Ramos. It's smart. It's forward thinking.
Yeah, I love it. I mean, as an Astros fan, getting Maldonado, obviously, there's really zero fantasy impact there, aside from the fact that he's a warm body that's going to get at bats. And I mean, Stassi's playing time is going to be reduced a little bit. Now, Maldonado there. Bottom of the lineup, maybe Maldonado comes up with some RBIs just because the lineup is so strong once they get everybody Correa, Altuve back in the lineup. But yeah, the fact that the Astros play Seattle a ton over the next 2 months, and then you have Boston, you have Cleveland, you get it's really about taking away the other team's strengths and getting ready for the playoffs, and they're in the position where they can do that.
I agree. You like to see that as a fan of a team, and you know, we're kind of stepping out from the fantasy baseball perspective, but you're seeing teams kind of gear up. They're gearing up for the second level for when the real season starts. And adding Wilson Ramos to the Phillies lineup, which is already overproduced. We didn't see Odubel Herrera doing this. We didn't see Cesar Hernandez doing this. We didn't see Reese Hoskins continuing this. Like, they're all producing, and now you're adding another bat to that. You know, the Phillies are going to be a little dangerous come September if they can get there.
Yeah, that's exactly right. It's going to be getting there. It's going to be dealing with Atlanta and their newfound pitcher in Gausman. It's going to be dealing with a resurgent Nationals team, dealing with Milwaukee for the wild card now with their credit infield. I mean, it's going to be – and then you have the NL West, too. It's going to be a heck of a pennant race September in the NL.
What are your guys' projections? Who do you think makes the playoffs for the NL? Because I know the AL is kind of set. We have some juggernauts in the AL. But the NL is kind of all over the place. What do you both think?
Ben, I'll let you go first on that.
I think that there's going to be the Dodgers, the Phillies, the Cubs. And then I think it's going to be the Diamondbacks and the Braves for the two wild card spots.
Wow. All right.
I think the Nationals are going to get a wild card spot. I think they're going to finish strong over the last 2 months. They're going to get in there. I think the Phils are going to hang on. I think the Braves are going to fall off a little bit. And again, I think the Dodgers, Diamondbacks. I also like what the Diamondbacks did at the deadline, picking up Escobar. It was a good move, especially since Jake Lamb has been absolutely terrible and injured this year.
Love that.
And then all the other moves like Matt Andres and Ziegler and guys like that, there's no fantasy impact, but it just tightens up that bullpen.
I think getting Diekman and Ziegler is so underrated, and no one's talking about that. Like, they added their own Cody Allen and Andrew Miller. Like, they went out and said, hey, we can get this too. There's guys who can fire 99 miles an hour and strike out people. It was Diamondbacks did great.
Yeah, those guys, I think Diekman's a very underrated guy.
All right, guys, why don't we move into the next trade, and let's talk a little bit about the Tigers moving Leonis Martin over to the Indians. Do we see any fantasy value there? Because there's a good chance that he's playing every day, and he's had a decent offensive season. Do we think that there's a lot of fantasy value from him, Ray?
Do you really want to? I mean, it's like Rajah Davis. I mean, does Rajah Davis have much fantasy value? They had Craig Allen. I mean, I feel like Cleveland's outfield is always a freaking mess. And it's always trying to ride the hot hand to whoever the heck is healthy. I mean, maybe Martin steals a few bases, but you're going to have to suffer through a bad average, no power. You're probably better off just moving on.
What about you, JR?
Yeah, I'd rather have Grady Sizemore back from the dead. I mean, who cares about Leonis Martin? I mean, what's he going to do? He's going to go 1-for-4 every night, maybe with a stolen base. It's more of I'd rather have Rajah Davis starting than Leonis Martin, honestly. At least Rajah runs the bases well and can listen to signs. Leonis Martin can't even listen to a sign from a third base coach. That's what he's in trouble with in Detroit. So, I don't know. Maybe it's good bench help. It could help him.
I mean, I don't think that it's the worst move. I mean, he's hitting .251 for the year, so it's not great. But, I mean, he's got 9 homers, 7 steals. I think that at least at the bottom of the order, he gives him someone who has some speed and can potentially put the ball over the fence occasionally. I mean, they were kind of hoping that Bradley Zimmer was going to be that guy this year, and he was an absolute disappointment, and he's not going to play anymore this year. But I think right now, being able to at least get him for someone who is either able to come in and be depth or is able to be an everyday starter, and deeper fantasy leagues, you could have some fantasy value from him. Depending on this type of format, you know, if you're in a 15 team league with 5 outfielders, he's going to at least get enough playing time to be useful. But it all depends on the size of your league. One of the biggest moves that happened during the trade deadline was the Cardinals moving Tommy Pham to the Rays, which I'm pretty sure none of us saw happening, especially with the moves that the Rays ended up moving later or making later in the day. They didn't really give up anything for him. The best piece was Justin Williams, who is not having a good year. I mean, I guess he has a chance to come up next year, but there's so much outfield depth into minor leagues and into big leagues for the Cardinals, that the likelihood that he is able to contribute at all is extremely slim. So what do we think of Tommy Pham actually going to the Rays, JR?
There's two ways to think. Like, what do you think? The media says he's a bad guy. He has all these demands. He's a hothead in the clubhouse. And then there's us, this fantasy analysis, who says, yo, this guy's a stud. He can hit. He can run. He can steal. He can do everything. So I'm going to just side with what I know as a fantasy analysis and listen to you guys, listen to Matt and to Mike and all the guys in the chat room. This guy's a stud. There's no reason he should have been dealt at all. He should have been the cornerstone of this Cardinals franchise, and they just gave him up for nothing. But was anyone else mind blown by this? I was like, what the hell happened?
I think that was a total dump trade. I mean, obviously, they have logjam in their outfield in St. Louis. So, you know, this makes a little bit of room for Tyler O'Neill and his biceps. It makes some room for Bader. I mean, that St. Louis team in general this year is just freaking toxic. With Bud Norris issues and with Jordan Hicks, with Dustin Fowler. But, I mean, back on to Pham. Going into the season, I was probably one of the few guys that I just didn't love Pham. That, I mean, if you look at him, he has power, he has speed, but then it's like, all right, this guy's still, whatever Pham says, there was a whole big SI article a few months ago, whatever Pham says about the Cardinals held him back, he didn't get a fair shake, this, that, the other. I mean, whether the Cardinals did screw up the situation, there's still a reason why this guy's 27 years old, and last year was really the first time he ever got a full opportunity in the big leagues. But again, the guy hit 306 with 23 homers and 25 stolen bases, so obviously there's production there.
Yeah, but he also threw, Piscotty under the bus. He threw Grucic under the bus, saying that these guys were getting playing time over him, and they're scrubs, or they suck, and he should be playing. Like, dude, who the hell are you? All right? Yeah. You're just coming up from the minors, and these guys are already up here producing. So that already rubbed me the wrong way with Pham. But then he came out of the gates after that article got released and started crushing it. So then you got to think, maybe he's got a point. So you know what? There's so much potential there. This is phenomenal for the Rays. They got a key player for the next 10 to 15 years.
Yeah, I mean, maybe he's not going to hit 306 again like he did last year with the 368 Babbitt. Maybe he's closer to the 250-ish hitter that he is this year. But again, 14 homers, 10 bags so far this year. I mean, you're talking about a guy that rolls out of bed. And is a 15-15 player rolling out of bed with upside for more. I don't necessarily love the fact that his ISO went from 214 to 151 last year to this year. But again, still, the guy has talent. Tampa gave nothing up for him. And he's going to get to play every day in a low-pressure situation.
So, Can we talk about it? Was there really something going on in that clubhouse? Like, something had to be up. Like, there's no reason they trade him. God.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, Matheny's gone, so I don't know what the hell it is at this point, but it was definitely addition by subtraction. At least I think it has to be.
Do you think, now, I wanted to ask Matt about this, but I haven't had a chance yet. Was Dexter Fowler's leadership, challenged by these young guys who came up and said, you don't know what you're doing? Because then Dexter hit the bench, and these guys started playing. So that's just a big mess there.
Yeah, because apparently Bud Norris, Bud Norris, for whatever it's worth, felt the need to take Hicks under his wing or try to show Hicks the right way to do things or what he thought was the right way to do things. So, yeah, so where was there a leadership issue?
Okay, so now we've talked about 3 minutes about Tommy Pham in the clubhouse creating problems. Is that enough to say, hey, I want to take this guy to my team? Maybe it's enough to say the Cardinals say, get the hell out of here. So who really wins?
I still think fantasy owners win if Tampa's going to put him in the outfield for the next 2 months and just let the guy fly.
Who's playing in their outfield?
I mean, you have him and Kiermaier.
There's going to be Austin Meadows, and there's going to be a mix of Carlos Gomez in there.
But they're not getting rid of Maxwell Smith, though. They'd like that guy.
Malik?
They've been begging on him for 3 years now, and he's finally actually this year, he's actually kind of producing. So you're just going to say, sorry, see ya?
No, there's probably a good chance that Kevin Kiermaier gets hurt within the next 7 days.
And I mean, they could rotate with the DL too. But I mean, again, Pham is also going someplace where he has no history. whatever the hell has gone on, whether it's right, wrong, or indifferent with Pham and the Cardinals, that's still attached to him like a scarlet letter moving up through that system and moving up and having played with some of those guys in the minor leagues. Where here, he goes to Tampa, nobody knows him from anything, and like there's nobody on Tampa that has any sort of, I mean, maybe Kiermaier, but there's nobody that has any kind of big league cred on that team.
They might not have cred, but I think, like you said, Kiermaier is like sadly enough, is probably the face of that franchise. Like, the fans love that guy, so he's going to be there forever. And then what do you do with the outsides? Yeah, Pham has to be there, so Pham will be one. You just trade for Austin Meadows. Like, he has to be another, so Smith is now out. Like, what do we do?
Are you asking me what I should do to run the organization? Because I don't get paid enough to do that.
Well, you know, I think you're smarter than Steve Phillips, and he's run your former organization, and he's run the Orioles into the ground, so you could tell me better than him.
That's very true. I probably could. I mean, in all honesty, like we said, we could easily see Carlos Gomez being someone who gets moved at the waiver deadline. Kevin Kiermaier is not long for the healthy world because he's never healthy. I wouldn't be surprised if they don't necessarily play Austin Meadows right away as much as I'd like them to and keep Malik Smith up. I wouldn't be surprised if they play Tommy Pham 95% of the time from here on out, play Malik Smith 75% of the time, play Kiermaier 70% of the time, and play Austin Meadows for whatever is left out of that amount of time. You know, 50, 60%, whatever it is. I wouldn't be surprised if it's something like that where people are getting rotated. But I would expect that Pham is probably the person who gets the most playing time. I mean, they already have him playing hitting cleanup, so they clearly value his bat. And if he's able to produce, then there's no way they're taking him out of the lineup.
Agreed.
Yep.
All right, guys, why don't we move into one of the last trades that we're going to be talking about, and that's going to be Adam Duvall going to the Braves. Do we see this as a fantasy-relevant move, or do we see this more as a he's going to end up being more of a fourth-slash-rotational-type outfielder, and he still has some pop but not a great average?
I mean, yeah, Duvall is what he is. He's not going to change the type of player that he is going to Atlanta. The fact that Scott Schebler was getting playing time over him, and that's kind of partly why they traded him, I think says something. But, I mean, to me, if you're in a weekly league, it's kind of tough to go with Duvall in a daily league because they're going to kind of rotate him in and out of that outfield. And you want some power. You don't really care about your batting average. Yeah, Duvall has a little more value.
I think the haul that they got for him was amazing. Preston Tucker, Lucas Sims, Matt Wisler. I mean, Sims and Wisler were guys we were talking about in the beginning of the year who could be potentially like, you know, call-ups for the Braves who would do well in the rotation. And then add in Preston Tucker, who when he did come up, contributed okay. I think the Reds got a great haul for an Adam Duvall, who we are kind of thinking is like a C-plus outfielder. Like, he's good. Way to put him in there, but great haul for that.
I don't see Adam Duvall as going to be someone who's going to make or break a fantasy team. I mean, you weren't expecting him to, at this point in the year, you weren't expecting him to provide you a ton of help. He was more of a player that you needed some occasional pop from, and if you were in a deep league, he was likely someone who was getting time as your utility slash maybe a fourth outfielder or something of that nature, depending on the size of the league. But he hasn't had a great year. Maybe a change of scenery will be able to help. Obviously, Cincinnati kept trying to rotate people in, and maybe that discouraged him a little bit, but I don't know if Atlanta is necessarily going to really do anything other than the fact that they're in the pennant race. So he could get hot at any time, but I don't expect much in terms of an average. And his walk rate this year hasn't been as productive as what we've expected in the past. So we'll have to see what type of fantasy value he's able to provide from here on out.
I guess he's going to a smaller park technically. Left field and center are smaller. Right field's a little bit larger, but I don't know. Duvall's blah. Who really cares?
Yeah, pretty much.
It's like Adam Dunn back in the day. When Adam Dunn was getting traded at the end of his career, you're like, eh, I guess you're adding Adam Dunn. Whatever.
Hold on. Do we know if anyone covered last week's trades in a show?
I have no idea.
If not, there's 10 trades that we haven't touched. I'm trying to figure out if we should do them or not.
We could just rapid fire them if you want.
Well, we're already at 55 minutes.
So I think we're fine. I mean, I think we hit on the big ones.
Yeah. I mean, I also think that's been a pretty entertaining podcast, though. So it's like not people are going to be bored about it.
Yeah.
You guys are the worst. You know that, right? You guys are mean.
You're like, are you the worst host? Is that it?
Yes, that's it. All right, we'll rapid fire it.
Go ahead. Chuck would never do this.
Chuck would never rapid fire?
He would never just have these long pauses.
Chuck always has long pauses. That's all Chuck does.
Don't you talk about my host like that.
All right, guys. What do we think of Keone Kela going to the Pirates bullpen as a setup man? Do we expect him to have decent value in a saves holder league, considering that they are in the pennant race, JR?
I'm in two holds leagues, and I haven't picked up everywhere I can. Smart move by the team. Bluster your bullpen. Can't go wrong in that. Well done by the Pirates.
Completely agree, and I think you should look at Jose Leclerc to get some saves in Texas, whatever saves are actually there, since they're not that good.
Yeah, that's someone who I had pegged as a potential closer last year. I'm actually a little surprised that they moved on from Kela this year, because he doesn't make a ton of money, and he's still kind of young. But I do think that Leclerc is someone who should have the opportunity to get first crack at that gig, especially with Jake Diekman no longer there. And for Keone Kela being in Pittsburgh, I think that he'll still be able to maintain roughly a strikeout per inning. He's given good ratio numbers this year. And, you know, if you're in a saves league, then obviously you're likely not going to get any value from him, because Felipe Vasquez hasn't blown a save since the end of May. He's seemingly past all those issues and that he had earlier in the year, and he's striking out people at a great clip. So I don't expect him to have anything happen unless there is an injury. But in the saves holder league, I think that he probably gets a boost in value just because of the type of offense that Pittsburgh has compared to how their pitching is. I think that they are in a lot of close games, so there's a good chance that he likely gets more save holds than what he did have while he was in Texas.
Very similar to Kelvin Herrera, who went to the Nats. If you're in a deep league, I know a lot of us from the Invitational who listen to this. I hung on to Herrera. You get a save every now and then. Maybe it's one a week. Maybe it's two every 2 weeks. But somebody just to hold, it keeps your ratios down, gives you strikeouts, sprinting. Good guy to have if you want like an Adam Ottavino type with saves opportunities.
All right, why don't we move into the Red Sox getting Ian Kinsler. As of right now, they need a second baseman because Eduardo Nunez is playing third base with Rafael Devers on the DL. Do we expect that Kinsler is able to hold this job full-time for the rest of the year? And if so, does he provide any fantasy benefit to your team in terms of steal some pop, maybe an improvement in average, right?
Yeah, I think so. I think he'll hold the job all year. I mean, I kind of liked him going into the season, going to L.A. He really didn't get going. I mean, again, 36 years old. I'm not expecting much in the stolen base department, but I mean, I think he'll pick up some runs, scored some RBIs. His BABIP is .239 this year, so maybe his average ticks up a little bit. But I mean, he does have 13 homers, so I mean, he'll show a little bit of pop. I think that lineup would be good for him.
What about you, JR? You like that?
I agree. I think Nunez goes to a more utility role, can fill in at second, third, short, anywhere in the outfield. It's Kinsler's job to lose. He'll keep it.
Yeah, I like Kinsler. I would have liked to see him make some improvements as the year went on. Obviously, he's had some trouble with the batting average, but he still chips in some stolen bases. He chips in some pop. I think that being able to work with the lineup that he has now, which, I mean, I understand that you still have Trout and Upton in the Angels lineup, and there have been some people who haven't succeeded in terms of, like, Zach Cozart, and, you know, you still have Pujols, you have Cole Calhoun, who's only now heating up. I think that, obviously, the Red Sox lineup is going to be significantly better, so there's chances that even if he hits at the bottom of the lineup, he still gets batted in at a higher clip. What do you guys think of the Yankees getting Lance Lynn? Do you think that this is a move that will keep him in the rotation with how bad Sonny Gray has been, or do you think that he's going to be used out of the bullpen like he was today, JR?
Not touching Lance Lynn unless I'm in a 14-team league or deeper. You know, if I'm in an 18-team league, Lance Lynn definitely needs to be owned. But if I'm in a standard 10 or 12-team league, not owning Lance Lynn, not touching him.
Yeah, no, I'm not either. I think he does get into the rotation maybe even for a start or two with Gray potentially moving to the bullpen because he's been absolutely terrible. But again, Lynn really isn't that much better. I think he's one of those guys where he's going to throw five or six innings, give up four or five runs, maybe get you a win. That's about it. I'm not sure it's worth it unless, like JR said, you're in a deeper league.
See, for me, this is actually something that I consider a sneaky good move at the deadline. I actually see him being able to give you back SP3 value for the rest of the year. I think.
No way.
God, you're so Steve Phillips, dude. You're the same.
Wow.
You guys done? The thing is he's been pitching better as of late. They don't have anyone. I mean, I understand CC Sabathia is older and he's able to pitch well enough. And Jay Happ has performed well this year. And, you know, last year wasn't great, but the year before was. So I think that Lance Lynn is someone who, if he takes the bull by the reins and he's able to actually pitch well, I mean, he pitched well today out of the pen, and Sonny Gray did not. I could easily see him keeping a spot in the rotation and being that number five starter and actually giving you, you know, when a wins league, he's going to give you a bunch of wins by being a Yankee. He has been improving lately, so I can see those ratio numbers coming down. He still gets you a decent amount of strikeouts. So I wouldn't be surprised that due to the wins, if he's able to actually pitch quality starts consistently, he'll be able to potentially give you some SP3 for the rest of the year.
All right, the guy's walking over five batters per nine innings this year.
You walk and over five batters per year, but that doesn't matter either.
And honestly, I'm not sure he's even going to get to a quality start, let alone get to a win, because, I mean, they also picked up Zach Britton at the deadline. So let's think about that. I mean, Britton, obviously, from a fantasy perspective, he really only matters now, like Kella, in a league where you're going to get your holds. But the fact that they picked up Britton, they essentially have four all-star relievers in Chapman, Britton, Robertson, and Betances. They're shortening the crap out of that game. So the first sign of trouble, Lynn's coming out of there. So I'm not sure he's going to be around to qualify for a win or qualify for a quality start.
Exactly right. Exactly fucking right. Because that's what our boss, Justin Mason, would want. Go tell him what's really going to happen. I know you guys want to talk about people that nobody wants to talk about. And Lance Lynn is somebody nobody in a 12 team should ever talk about. It's like James Shields. You don't own him. Do not do it. He's not going to get opportunities.
Ben would pick him up to try to trade him because he's now a Yankee.
And we would say no 100 times, and he'd ask us 101 times.
I'm going to find some stupid person to do it. I guarantee it. I'll find some sucker in the staff league. All right, what do we think of Rays Astros getting Roberto Osuna? Do we expect this to be a really good move, or because the Rays, because the Astros have such a good offense and have had such good pitching, the likelihood that he gets a ton of saves from here on out is pretty slim. What do we think about this, Ray? Are you happy about this move from your team? Obviously, it's an improvement from Ken Giles, but how much for fantasy is it an improvement?
I mean, he's an all-star closer. He's 23 years old. He's under contract for another few years. So I think this is a move not only for this year, but for beyond. I mean, they're going to need somebody to close games out. Hector Rendon is doing a pretty solid job of it, actually, this year. I think they're going to ease Ozuna into it. I think Ozuna has to be owned in every single league. But, I mean, from the Astros' perspective, there was also no risk in this deal. Because after Giles, he punched himself in the face after he pulled the save against the Yankees. He cursed at Hinch when Hinch took him out of the game when he allowed four straight hits to open up the ninth inning in his last appearance before he was sent to the minors. They didn't trust him in the playoffs last year. Giles' career in Houston was over anyway, so, I mean, they essentially took somebody that had no future with the team and traded him to take a shot on a 23-year-old former All-Star closer.
Right. Yeah. You know this more than I know this. The Astros are one of the very, very, very few teams in the MLB who have a no tolerance policy for domestic abuse. It's written on the front of their doors when you walk into the clubhouse. We do not stand for domestic abuse. So this guy comes back from a trial saying he's convicted of domestic abuse. He can't play for them. He can't play for them. If he does, then that franchise is a laughingstock. Because everything they've preached for the last 6 years when that sign went up that they are no tolerance is a joke. So what is this team? Are they a joke? Are they saying we really believe we're not about domestic abuse? Are they saying, hey, wait a minute. If a guy could throw 99 and strike people out with a wicked slider, then he can still play for us, even though he punched his wife in the face.
Yeah, I mean, I think obviously it's a lot easier to say we have no tolerance when you're talking about some random double-A player that threw his girlfriend down the stairs and then they cut him right away. Obviously, it's a little easier to have no tolerance about him. But, I mean, yeah, I definitely can see how this would come off as hypocritical with them picking him up. But, I mean, we
don't know. What does this do for ticket sales? What does this do for sponsors? What does this do for everything? This affects a lot.
No, it does. I mean, obviously, we don't know the full story from either direction. We don't know. Apparently, Luna talked to Ozuna, talked to whoever. I mean, there's obviously pieces missing. I'm not sure whether or not it's going to fit into how it plays with their no tolerance policy and whether or not, I mean, at the end of the day, whether there's charges filed, not filed, whether he goes to jail, doesn't go to jail, whatever it is, he still accepted a 75 game suspension.
I don't think he ever pitches for the Astros. I think he doesn't pitch this year. I think in the offseason, when he is convicted, they deal him out. Because this team has made it a poster and to be known to everyone that they do not stand for domestic abuse.
I mean, again, that also wouldn't surprise me either, because if you look at the package that they gave up, it was nothing that was going to help them for this year.
Yeah, it was nothing.
So, I mean, again, I still think there has to be something else to the story that we're not knowing whether either it's like you said, he doesn't pitch again this year or there's something to do with the charges. I mean, obviously, he's not the first player to be suspended under this policy. He got 75 games. Chapman got 30. Reyes got 50. Familia got less than that. So I mean, there's obviously there's something going on here that there's some piece that I don't think that they would have gone out and made this move. I think there's something that we don't know, or at least that's what I'm going to assume at this point.
I hope so. You're innocent until proven guilty. So let's hope it's that way.
And I mean, again, it's also the same case for Ozuna, not to say that he didn't do it or to make excuses for him, but I mean, and then there's a whole issue of second chances, whatever, or if they're going to say, all right, whatever, we have a zero tolerance policy. If it happens on our watch once, you're gone, but if it happens on someone else's watch, we're still going to give you a second chance, but then if you screw up at all again, then we're going to cut you loose as well.
I hear you. What do you got next, Ben?
All right, guys, why don't we move into talking a little bit about Brad Brock. Obviously, this is someone who has had good years each of the past couple of years, and a change of scenery may be a benefit to him. Do we think that there's any benefit in this Atlanta bullpen for him with all the talent that they do have there?
Yeah, it sucks. It sucks they got him. It sucks they got a stud out of the bullpen, a guy that can come in at a seventh or eighth inning and just shut it down. It sucks. It's a great move by Atlanta. They're going to crush the Mets. They're going to crush the Nationals. They're going to crush the Phillies with this guy. It's a great move.
I mean, again, I guess Gibbons is going to get the saves in Baltimore, whatever saves are there. Brock, yeah, he's not going to have much fantasy value. I mean, I think he might steal a save or two if they play the matchup game with him and Minter before Vizcaino comes back, but that's probably about it.
Yeah, I think that this could be a good move in a saves hold league. I think that there's significantly more value by being on the Braves as opposed to the Orioles, even if you were able to pick up some saves. You know, it doesn't help you when you only get maybe 7 to 10 for the rest of the year as opposed to maybe 19 just by the definition of the Braves actually, you know, competing. So I think that there's a very good chance that in a saves hold of the league, he sees significant value for the rest of the year, especially if he's able to actually improve on that ERA, which is up a run and a half from what his career ERA is. JR, are you happy about Asdrubal Cabrera coming over from the Mets over to the Phillies? Do you think that this is a good fantasy move?
Not fantasy, because I would never own a Drubal Cabrera in fantasy unless it was like an 18-team league. But are you happy that you lost him as a player in the middle of your infield as a Mets player? Because I'm really happy I got him. I'm glad he's in the clubhouse. I'm glad he can help Cesar Hernandez. I'm glad he can help Scott Kingery. He's a veteran. He's a good guy with a good heart on his shoulder. He's very involved in his community. What do you think? You lost him as a Mets player. That's someone that I would, if I was the Mets, I'd want to keep in my clubhouse.
I mean, he's going to be a free agent at the end of the year, so I think the fact that they were able to get anything for him is useful. I mean, I understand that Killamay hasn't had the greatest year, but I think that there's some upside, and we've at least seen that the Mets are able to at least do well with pitchers that they have in their system. Not every pitcher is going to be good, but you've seen more luck than not coming from the value of what their pitchers are able to bring. Even if they do get hurt, you at least see some benefit from them, whether it's Seth Lugo and Robert Gsellman, or if it's someone like a Steven Matz, a Zach Wheeler, or a Syndergaard, or even a DeGrom. You've seen what they've been able to do over the past couple of years, whether they're competing or not with the pitchers. So I think Franklin Killamay is someone who is decent, and the Mets could always bring him back next year. You know, right? Would you be surprised if the Mets actually brought him back to a 2-year, like $12 million deal next year? Because I wouldn't be.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't be surprised at all. I mean, I think it was a good trade for the Mets to get something, and I think the pitcher they got has a ton of upside. I think it was a good move for Philly because you can play him anywhere across that infield, good in the clubhouse, but there's not really much fantasy because it's going to also be hard to project his playing time.
Yeah. Well, I don't think Kingery sees the at-bats anymore. I think Kingery goes into more of a, you know, once he plays every 3 days or something like that, which is fine for Scott because he's so young. And now we're going to get a little veteran leadership. We're missing that Jimmy Rollins type leadership in the Phillies locker room. And I think Cabrera could really provide that.
See, I think Cabrera, who's having a pretty good offensive year in general, I think he's going to at least give you some value in 15 teams or deeper. Basically, anything under that, he's likely going to be someone who is on the waiver wire unless you have, you know, a corner and a middle infield position and you have like five outfielders and two utilities. You know, if you have like deep rosters, but only, you know, like 13, 14 owners, 12 owners, something like that. I think that the deeper the league, he's going to have value. It's a little bit surprising because I actually heard on Sports Talk Radio, right, that some people were unhappy that they moved him. And they're like, well, you should have kept him. He's a great locker room guy, kind of like what JR was saying. But at the end of the year, he's going to be a free agent. So what's the purpose of keeping someone like that? You
Exactly.
have to go and actually acquire some talent. I'm glad that they were able to do it. From a fantasy perspective, Killamay could be a SP4 in a couple years, maybe an SP3 if he's able to figure out the walk issues. I'd like to see him strike more people out, get and control those walks. I think that if you're going to have someone who's able to do it, at least the Mets organization has, like I said, has shown the ability to at least develop some pitchers in their system. As for Asdrubal, I think that in those deeper leagues, you're at least going to get some decent pop. You're going to get someone who is likely going to hit like 270 for the rest of the year, get on base, and they're going to move around to diamond. So there's potential for different eligibility for next year, depending on how much he gets. Right, what are your thoughts on Eduardo Escobar going to Diamondbacks? Because that was a little bit surprising. You know, I think that that's a good bat for their lineup, considering that they have Pollock and Goldschmidt. Jake Lamb's useless this year. So, what do you think of Eduardo Escobar in Arizona?
I think he's going to keep on hitting. I mean, the guy's been a double machine so far this year. He's going into a strong lineup. I mean, we saw what happened last year when they added JD Martinez. I'm not saying that Escobar is going to hit like Martinez did or it's going to have the same effect as Martinez had, but I think it's going to be a solid addition. I think he's going to hit the middle of that lineup, bracket doubles. I think the average is going to be there. The RBI and the runs are going to be there too. And I think it also incrementally makes Pollock and the Goldschmidt a little better.
JR, do you like to move?
I love it. I love that kid when he was on the Twins. He's got an 850 OPS right now. He's got over 100 hits. I think he's got like 105, 106. He only has like a 50 runs right now. I think we're going to see an uptick in runs because I think he's going to a better offense and he could play anywhere. I mean, he's one of the guys that I love owning in fantasy. Not really maybe as a starter, but maybe as like that first or second bench guy because he can play second, third, short. He might gain outfield eligibility now in Arizona. so we're not going to know. But the guy can play all over, and he can plug a bit on those Mondays or Thursdays where there's not a lot of games. So awesome addition, and we're going to definitely see an uptick in fantasy value.
Yeah, I like his fantasy value in Arizona. I think that it's – I mean, it was already good to start the year by being on the Twins, considering that Dozier wasn't hitting. They sent Sano down. You know, Joe Mauer is what he is. Basically, the only other player that they had contributing the entire year was Eddie Rosario. So I think the fact that he's now going to be in Arizona, I think that he's still going to be able to hit for around the same average. I think he should see maybe a slight downgrade in his home runs, but I think you're going to see an uptick in his RBIs and his runs. So I think that's what you're basically looking for at this point of the year, is to have someone who's going to be able to give you some value of any league of over 12, I think, over 12 players. So, all right, guys, what do you think about Cole Hamels going over to the Cubs? Is this a move that really has very little significance in terms of fantasy just because of Cole Hamels and his age, the fact that he doesn't have a great ERA? He, you know, he strikes more people out this year than he did last year, but he's not the same pitcher that he used to be, and I'm sure the JR is disappointed of that. But do we like him being in Chicago as opposed to Texas, JR?
He shouldn't have never went to Chicago. He should have came to Philly. We're having Shane Victorino, Jimmy Rollins, and Ryan Howard all back this year, remembering them. It would have perfect thing to make Cole's his juices, his energy, his adrenaline. It would have really picked him up and turned him on, be back home for one more year. I think we would have seen a better Cole Hamels if he would have been to Philly this year. But he's going to Wrigley. It's not much of a difference from Texas. Arlington is about the same dynamics as Wrigley Field. Better offense behind him, so maybe we'll see more wins, more quality starts. But I think Cole Hamels gives up fly balls out the wazoo. He had a great year early to start with a lot of strikeout rates, but Cole right now, if you're in a 12-team league, which most of us are, is a great SP3. I think if you're in a 15 to 18-team league, he could be an SP2 throughout the rest of the way because the offense behind him. But you know what you're getting with Cole. You've been dealing with Cole Hamels for 15 years now, so I mean, you know what you're getting.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit better that he goes to the National League. He's going to get better run support, but yeah, I'm not going that crazy with Hamels at this point.
Yeah, he's someone who, you know, he looked decent early on, but he's someone who I would rather avoid if I have the ability to, because I just don't know how much value he's going to hold in Chicago. All right, Ray, why don't you tell our listeners where you can be reached and what you're working on?
I am on Twitter at Ray_Kuhn_28 and working on keeping the baseball going for the next 2 months. Getting the football going, both at Friends with Fantasy Benefits and over at Roto Professor as well.
And what about you, JR?
You can find me over at JohnRussell215 on Twitter. New site's going to be launching soon, EaglesFrontOffice.net. I'm still working on the Great Fantasy Baseball Invitational, still second or third in my league, rotation every time. But when it comes to FWFB, that's the family, and whatever Justin Mason says, he's the boss. He controls all of us, so I'm just glad I got to be on with Ray Ray and Benji today. It was an absolutely awesome podcast. I know it ran long, but it was actually pretty entertaining.
Well, JR, we appreciate you being able to hop on. I'm glad that I was able to finally do a podcast with you. I know we've been talking about it for forever, and I'm glad we were able to actually get one on. It was nice to get your input on all these trades, especially because I felt like we were talking about somehow connecting to the Phillies on every single trade. Regardless of if it had nothing to do with it, I felt we were always able to bring it back to the Phillies.
That's what happens when you're from Philly. You just love all your Philadelphia teams. It doesn't matter if it's the Sixers, Flyers, Eagles, or whoever. I mean, you just love them. I mean, I love the Phillies.
I can also be reached at bbrandisfwfb. You can find me on the Friends with Fantasy Benefits basketball podcast. You'll also be able to find me occasionally on the Push Accept podcast for baseball. And I look forward to being one of the football shows for this upcoming year. So from the rest of us at Friends with Fantasy Benefits, have a great baseball season, everyone.